would say, I don't know that there's ever a wrong time to start. I think we get that question a lot. Is it too soon? No, if you have willing participants who want to change certain dynamics, or things are already not feeling rough or feeling well, or you're hitting a rough spot, go check in on your relationship. It's okay. There's never a bad time to start. It becomes bad when we think this is just a phase. It'll get better. We're just hitting a rough spot. Everybody hits rough spots thinking that magically things are just going to all of a sudden become close again. We don't work that way. So if you're open to it and there's things you want to work on, start couples work.
Welcome to The Mom Feed, a podcast about the transition into motherhood. I'm Lauren Lobley, also known as Mom, Mommy, and Mom to two young kids, Madison and Liam. When a woman becomes a mother, she experiences the most neurobiological changes in her life. This transitional period is called Matrisense. Learning about this helped my journey into motherhood make so much more sense, and I want you to feel the same way. So, if you are a soon-to-be mom, new mom, or already in the thick of motherhood, this podcast is for you. Join me and my guests each week as we tackle various topics in and around life as a mother. Ready? Let's go. Hello, and welcome back to The Mom Feed. It has been a hot minute, y'all. Since the last time I posted an episode, I turned 40. I hadn't planned anything special because, to be honest, life has been a little challenging lately, which explains why I have not posted an episode in a while. So I was just going to do something small and not make it a big deal. But my friends would not have that. And they surprised me and took me away on a 5-day trip to Miami a few weeks ago. It was probably the most thoughtful gesture anyone has ever done for me. Well, anyone who isn't directly related to me, because let's be honest, as a parent myself, I know that my parents did and continue to do many things for me for the life that I lived up to now, and they will continue to do so, and, you know, as long as they can. But when people who are not related to you, meaning it's not unconditional love, show up for you in big ways, like my friends did a few weeks ago, it is really hard to put into words how that feels. And honestly, I'm still processing it. So we're 2 weeks after the trip, 2 weeks into my 40s, and I just am filled with gratitude for how these women showed up for me. And my cup truly runneth over. There is nothing like a female friendship, I just have to say. So now I'm 40, and I'm actually feeling quite fabulous. And I'm really happy to have the time to finally have been able to edit this episode and get it uploaded for y'all today. Today's show is with the amazing Rachel Fascio and Stacey Sherrill of Decoding Couples. Some of you may be like, oh, I kind of recognize that name. That's because they have blown up on Instagram. They birthed Decoding Couples during the pandemic, and they have daily amazing relationship advice. So if you are not already following them on Instagram, do yourself a favor and do. They are both licensed marriage and family therapists with a combined 20 years of experience in the field of relationships and marriage. Now, they both have a private practice in LA, but as I mentioned, during the pandemic, they created Decoding Couples, and basically it's an online platform that aims to take the complications out of communication with your partner and help couples break unhealthy patterns. Got any of those? So that they can connect more deeply. So as you'll hear on the show today, they have two relationship courses that you can take online. There's another one in the works that you're going to hear about today. And they have the best content on Instagram that I have found when it comes to relationships. So if you're in a place where your relationship could use some improvement, I'm referring to your romantic ones specifically, though I'm sure some of this could apply to friendships as well, you're going to love today's show and their content. So on the show today, we talk about love and marriage, and frankly, how love is not enough to sustain a healthy relationship. Yeah, we're busting the whole happily ever after myth that we've been sold about love and marriage. It is this, I've said this before, but this is one of my favorite episodes because we're, I mean, I'm assuming if you're listening, you are a parent. So you are either in a relationship or you were in a relationship. And I think we could all use help and we all need to kind of bust the myth of what we've been sold as what looks like a healthy relationship. So what I have learned from my own personal experience and from talking to people like Stacey and Rachel and like my friend Britta Bushnell and other relationship therapists and counselors is that a relationship is like its own being and it needs to be tended to. And it can be really easy to forget to feed it, but it's a being, so it needs to be fed. But it can be hard to do that, especially in the face of parenthood, financial crises, moving, job changes, loss of loved ones, and other challenges. They're endless, though. That's the thing. The challenges don't ever go away. So if we turn away from our relationship and don't feed it during those challenging times, well, we're going to have a hard time staying on the same path together. And if you're like me and you think that having children is what rocks your relationship, well, wait until you hear what Stacey and Rachel have to say about that. It was a total mic drop moment, for lack of a better overused term. So definitely keep listening for that. Okay, let's get you some relationship advice, shall we? This show is for you no matter what your relationship status is. And I promise this is going to be one of those episodes that you will want to listen to with a notepad and pen or the little notes app in your phone. Sorry, I'm old school. I like to write things down. And you're going to want to save it and listen to it again and again. And I would highly recommend listening to it with your partner if you've got a partner. Maybe not the first time if you don't want to. Maybe you listen to it and then you listen to it together. I don't know, but I know that y'all are both going to be better for listening to this episode. Your relationship will be better. Let's just say that. Okay, let's get to the show. Before we get to this monumental relationship advice episode that is sure to transform the way you think about your current and future relationships, let's talk about another thing that may transform your energy and much more. If you struggle with low energy, anxiety, brain fog, mental wellness, sleep issues, fluctuating weight, skin issues, gut health, and digestive health issues, keep listening. If not, you can skip over this. I don't know. Maybe I'll talk about this for a few minutes and then go straight to the show. So for those of you who are interested in what I'm talking about, keep listening. So a friend of mine reached out to me a few months ago to tell me about this drink she'd been drinking called Happy Juice. Now, I was like, oh, okay. I gave it my biggest side eye because I personally just don't think that wellness comes in a supplement or a powder. I think that health is a byproduct of good choices. Good choices about sleep hygiene, nutrition, whole foods, emotional well-being, physical fitness, quality of your relationships. It's a whole package. I do, however, think supplements have a place in good health. They certainly can. However, I don't think that you can supplement your way out of bad habits. So if you're depending on supplements to help you with all of your things and you're not doing anything else, then I would say don't waste your money on supplements and focus instead on your habits first. So with that said, my friend Hillary was like, Lauren, you don't understand. I've had adrenal fatigue and Hashimoto's and I've been struggling to get out of bed and to feel motivated and energized. And life has been such a struggle. And y'all, Hillary has 5 kids, so it makes sense that she would feel tired, right? But add in the adrenal fatigue and Hashimoto's and it's like a perfect cocktail of terrible. So cut to a few months later after she'd been drinking this magical elixir called Happy Juice every day. And she told me, straight up with tears in her eyes, that she feels like a completely different person. She's motivated to actually do workouts now. She's motivated to do the work she needs to do. She's motivated to get out of bed, to spend time with her kids without feeling drained. She's even lost a few pounds and she feels so much better in her body and her mind. She truly said she feels like a different person. So I believed her when she told me this because Hillary's a straight shooter. But I wasn't convinced that this fairy-like powder called Happy Juice would be right for me. I tried it for a month and honestly, I enjoyed the taste, but I didn't see much of a difference. Actually, that's not a completely true statement. The probiotic portion of the drink made me super bloated for the first few weeks, which pissed me off. And I was already over the whole Happy Juice thing when I realized that after a few weeks of the probiotics, the bloating went down, and then TMI, but my bowel movements had become regular. But I was like, ah, whatever. It's like, not whatever. It's fine. So I quit Happy Juice because I didn't want to throw away my money on something that tasted good but really didn't do much for me. Or so I thought. So stick with me. Cut to last Thursday. My son had been constipated pretty badly in the last few months. He'll go poop every 5 or 6 days. And lately his stools have actually been charts. Sorry, there's just no better description. So literally every toot becomes a chart. So bad. It makes potty training really tricky. Well, so last Thursday marked 8 days since the poor kid had gone to the bathroom. He's 3, by the way. So I tried giving him a bunch of dates and prune juice, and I even did 2 saline suppositories 2 days in a row, and still nothing. No poop. So I called my brother, who's an MD, and I asked for his opinion, and he said that there is probably a blockage, and what little poop is coming out is having to squeeze its way around the blockage. Again, I'm sorry for the details, but if you've ever had a kid who's constipated, then you'll understand. Anyway, my brother said that I'd probably have to take Liam, my son, to the doctor so that they could go up in there and release the blockage manually. So I was super distraught and feeling really bad for Liam, but I remembered that I still had some of the probiotics from my Happy Juice pack. And I had heard that there's like a kids pack from this company. The company's called Amare, by the way. And I'd heard that there's a kids pack and they have kids probiotics and a kids multivitamin, and moms had been reporting all sorts of amazing things. So I was like, you know, well, let me just give them some of the adult probiotics and see what happens. So I mixed up some of the adult probiotics and some of my favorite hydration, put it in on ice, and I sipped on it and he sipped on it. And he might have had like 5 sips of this pretty significantly tall glass of drink. So I was like, nothing's going to happen. Well, 8 hours later, he came into my room to announce that he had pooped. And I could not believe it. And actually, I didn't. I wanted more proof. I was like, well, that's probably just a coincidence. So the next morning, I gave him the same elixir, the probiotics and some hydration. And 8 hours later, he pooped again. The next morning, same thing. I gave him the elixir, but there was no poop that day. And I was like, aha, it doesn't really work. But then the next day I did it again. And then within 4 hours, this time he had not only pooped, but he had a full blowout. So it had clearly released a lot of what had been stuck in the previous 8 days. So could it be a coincidence? Of course. But I'm pretty convinced that it's the probiotics that actually loosened up his stool enough to finally come out. So what did I do? Well, I adjusted my attitude. And then I ordered him the kids pack of that probiotic blend and multivitamin blend, because I don't want to keep giving him the adult strength. But so many mothers I'd heard about with this kids pack were reporting things like their kids' temper tantrums going down, their kids' sleep improving. There are moms with autistic children who are saying, my kid is making eye contact with me and talking and is calmer. And I was like, okay, fine. So now I'm like, listening to all the testimonials that my friend Hillary had been sharing with me, because I had experienced such a success myself. So I ordered myself some more Happy Juice too, because why not? So I ordered myself some Happy Juice. I ordered Liam the kids pack, and we'll see what happens. Like, if you're interested in any of this, whether it's constipation or digestive health issues or sleep issues or anything like that, you can DM me or email me. I'm at the Mom Feed Podcast on Instagram. And then my email is lauren@themomfeed.com. And I'm happy to continue sharing my experience with you. If you're like, I kind of want to try this, I can send you a link for $10 off. And I think if you do subscribe and save, it's an extra 10%. So you'll get $10 off plus 10% off. And sometimes they do flash sales where it's 20% off. So just let me know if you're interested. I'll just keep you posted on how it's working for me and how it continues to work for Liam. So just so you know, what people are reporting is increased mental clarity and focus, decreased inflammation, reduced cravings, no more afternoon slump, feeling more motivated than they have in years, a deeper sense of happiness, deeper night's sleep, and so much more. But it takes 90 days to see results. So I'll basically report back in 90 days and let you know how it goes. Okay. Now that we've got that covered, let's talk about relationships, because that is also part of the equation in your health. All right, let's go. Oh my gosh, they're already fighting, you guys. What are we gonna do?
Yeah, this is normal.
Stacey and Rachel, I'm so glad to meet you. I was just saying offline that I feel like I know you because I'm on Instagram constantly looking at your reels that are so fantastic and so informative, but somehow you manage to make them just like you are our friends. Like, it's just so relatable. It's not like you're talking at us like you're therapists, but you're like with us in the trenches. And I think that's because you share your personal stories as well. And I just appreciate that so much about you.
Thank you. The trick is have zero shame and all the humility.
And don't shower.
Don't shower.
Make content.
Yeah. And that's how you deliver relatable content.
That's amazing. It was before we got in, I was like, should I reapply?
Do you No.
And I'm like, no, it's okay. I'll just go like
sure
this.
Shouldn't. Yeah. You get it. Yeah.
So why don't we just start with how you got into what you're doing, and then we'll get into the nitty gritty pretty quickly. So I think people are wanting that.
Sure. So both Rachel and I are licensed marriage family therapists out of Los Angeles, California, and we share a suite in which we run our private practices together. So that started a pretty good friendship. And then the pandemic hit, which kind of locked us down in our offices. Through that, Rachel had a lovely idea to do some little YouTube episodes talking about relationships during the pandemic. I was her first guest. We hit it off so well. We decided to just keep it, her and I. Fast forward to me creating an Instagram to promote these YouTube videos. And that is basically how Decoding Couples started. We realized that as our marriages were going through stuff and we were supporting each other as well as clients through some of the similar issues and concerns, that we knew a lot of other people had to be going through the same relationship ups and downs. And this gave us a platform to not only talk about it so people don't feel alone going through relationship struggles, we get to bring our own experiences and our expertise to give tools and insights so things can be a little bit better.
Yeah, I think there was a lot out there already that was just really like buttoned up, just very like stiff and kind of judgy, or like, this is the way to do it. And number one, that information's not appealing, and it sure as hell wasn't appealing to us at the time when we were really struggling. And during, because this all happened, we formed all this during COVID. We wanted this in-between space. Like, we were really crazy. Like, the world was falling around us. So relatable information was few and far between. And I think that's what also made us go, oh, if we need this, someone else has to need it. There has to be other people that need it. And that's how DC was born.
I love it. And so what do you offer now as far as, so do you still have your private practices on top of Decoding Couples? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you see people virtually, or is the way that people can come to you through your courses if they're not in LA?
Yeah, if they're not in Los Angeles, we have our own private practices that are completely separate from Decoding Couples. So Decoding Couples is its own little fiery entity. Like, we do not use it to see clients. They're completely separate. And the way we really wanted Decoding Couples to be this option that's not therapy, but it's still affordable, like relationship support. So we have two courses, depending on kind of like where you are in your relationship. And then we just also have a lot of free downloads and goodies for people, because again, you might be in this in-between stage. You should still have access to legitimate information that can help you. So we offer a bunch of stuff through DC.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's such a good point of having resources. Cause I was just having this conversation with my partner about like, love is not enough. Like, it's not enough just to fall in love and then be like, we're in love. And so, and then you don't feed the relationship, and then you add in children, which we'll talk about, because that just like throws a bomb into your relationship. And then you add multiple children. If you have family around or you don't, that makes a difference. And like, both of those scenarios offer different things in your marriage. And it's, you know, it's so easy. Then you throw in a pandemic, then you throw in some financial distress. Yeah. And you, like, there's so many things that can just take you away. So what I've just come to realize with relationships is really, do you know Britta Bushnell? She wrote Transformed by Birth. She, I would love to introduce you to her. She's amazing. She talks about the entity that is your relationship that needs to be fed into. And so many of us don't do that. And then all of a sudden I find we look up and we're like, oh, who are you? Wait, what are we doing? I love that you offer that as a resource, because I think most people think they just need to see a therapist or couples counselor when there's trouble. But when do you advise couples to start seeing a marriage, a counselor?
I think there's the stat, the most recent stat is that couples start couples therapy like 6 years too late. And a lot of times that ends in the result of splitting up or breaking up, and then, you know, couples therapy gets the bad rap that we went to couples therapy and things fell apart, which we talk about.
Part of our job is
helping people separate sometimes. So I would say, I don't know that there's ever a wrong time to start. I think we get that question a lot. Is it too soon? No, if you have willing participants who want to change certain dynamics, or things are already not feeling rough or feeling well, or you're hitting a rough spot, go check in on your relationship. It's okay. There's never a bad time to start. It becomes bad when we think this is just a phase. It'll get better. We're just hitting a rough spot. Everybody hits rough spots thinking that magically things are just going to all of a sudden become close again. We don't work that way. So if you're open to it and there's things you want to work on, start couples work.
Yeah. And then on the other end of it, and I guess, like, do you ever find that is there a time when it's too late? Like, if there's a couple who wants to go to therapy, but one has already made the decision that they don't want to go and they're done. And the one person is like, no, let's try. But do you know what I mean? Like, is there?
Yeah. If we talk about this a lot, if you have 1% willingness in whatever your relationship makeup is, 2 of you, 3 of you, 4 of you, whatever, if everyone involved has 1% willingness, that one can go to 2, that 2% can go to 3%, 3% can go to 6%. But if you don't have that 1%, that isn't something the best therapist in the world can like inject into you. You've got to have that 1%, and maybe that 1% looks like a very small action or a very small effort, but that is workable. And then that willingness needs like patience and time and all the other crap to make it through a really rough time or possibly ending a relationship. But there are times where if a partner does not have willingness or partners don't have willingness, I mean, I don't know how you practice. We practice pretty similarly. Like, we are not going to do that step of that journey for you. We bring that into the room and we allow everyone involved to sit in that. And sometimes it can be very freeing. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll say like, hey, you guys are saying this, but you are doing this. That's gotta be so scary. That's gotta be so hard. Cause I think it's okay if love is not enough. It's okay if too much damage has been done, but societally we don't like that. That's very uncomfortable. No. And that's not a good enough reason to like leave or be done. So to answer your original question, like, yeah, we do see sometimes that it isn't workable if you don't have that willingness at like bare bottom level.
Yeah, that makes sense. And there's something we'll go back to of the number one mistake. I don't know if you'll remember, I'll remind you that you say that couples make, but I always think, and I interviewed a friend of mine who's also a therapist, and she went through a very nasty divorce with somebody who was just very unwilling to just be kind, and they had 2 small children, and it was brutal. And I watched her go through it, and I said, there needs to be a course on how to divorce and co-parent and like how to I see annoying.
It's in the works.
Oh, it's in the works. We're ahead of you. In the pipeline.
Yes. Because I do think that there are like couples who are separating do need support from a therapist of like, okay, how do I, you know, have my feelings, but you've like you're parenting, right? So you can't just like go and cry in the corner when you're parenting and you don't want to say terrible things about your significant other, or even just like have your feelings in front of your kids. But you like, there's just, And beyond that, there's so the intricacies of separating, yes. especially when you have children and you have to continue having a relationship. Yeah. I'm excited to see that you're working on something like that, because it's so, what is the divorce rate? Like 50 something percent, or is it about?
Yeah. I think it's about at 50 now. Yeah. Cause not, people aren't getting married as much now. So the rate's getting better. And people are like, oh, see, it's not as bad. I'm like, yeah, y'all. Cause that's because not a lot of people are getting married at the same rate. Cause people are waking up and realizing love's not enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's true. Okay. Well, I'm glad about that, because there's so many people in our community who are navigating through these very tough divorces, and everybody's suffering. And I really don't think it needs to be that way. Like, it can be, I think, do you know Ziva Meditation, Emily Fletcher? She's lovely. She's got this big meditation practice, and she's got one for kids too called Ziva Kids, which is super sweet. They got the puppeteers from Sesame Street to make a character called Ziva Bunny, and my kids love it. And she went through a divorce, and she sent this beautiful letter, her newsletter, about how she and her husband just tried to make it work and it just wasn't working. And she said, instead of seeing it as a failure, they saw it as we're graduating to something new. Yeah. And I thought, oh, that is so beautiful. And you need both parties to be willing to have that. And how do you get there when you're so far apart? So that course is going to be so valuable when it comes out. Please let us know. Okay. So let's go back to staying together. And it was March 18th, maybe last year. I don't remember. Yeah. What? Yeah. Last year you said the number one mistake you're making in your relationship is doing the same thing over and over and expecting something different from your partner. So can you elaborate that? I think a lot of people are probably going, we know what we want and we keep trying to get it in the same way. What can we do instead?
Recognizing when that pattern is happening is a really big first step. Because a lot of times what we see and what we've gone through personally is sometimes we have a hard time believing who our partner shows us that they are. We lead our communication and our interaction and our expectation off of who we think they should be and what we want them to be, which then is so frustrating for both sides and kind of leads to this butting heads and stalemate versus saying, I would like for things to be like this. My partner doesn't feel that way. This is how they show up. This is what they're capable of. This is what they've told me they want to do. How do these two things work together versus continually just turning a blind eye to whatever stage our partner is in, right? We show up differently in different stages of life. In this stage, what is our partner capable of? What are my wants and needs? And how do these things blend together versus, again, just repetitively having the same conversations, doing the same techniques with each other, having the same interactions, and then feeling frustrated by the outcome. So we first got to take a step back and say, what am I expecting? Yeah. What am I not doing differently before any tools are going to work?
Yeah. No one loves that answer. They're always kind of like, it's easier for us to vilify our partners and what they're not doing. It's easy for us to be like, well, but they're not doing anything. And that's really what that post was about. You're repeating, to Stacey's point, that same expectation of not viewing them where they are, of not seeing where they're at. And a lot of people don't like this answer, but what are you doing differently? And so often we hear, but I've tried, or I'm burning. Okay. And if that's true and that's your experience, that's fine. But you can't then expect anything different. Someone always has to go first. And if you're telling me you're so done, that's okay. But then hold each other to both the done standard. Don't be done and expect them to be Superman or Superwoman or Superperson. And a lot of times, a lot of times one person shifting the dynamic in the dynamic can change the entire dynamic for good and for bad. It can either make the other partner or partners realize, holy crap, this can be better, this can be changed, or it can make the person that's doing the work realize, wow, I do deserve better. I do want different. I've outgrown this relationship. But so often we don't do anything different yet expect change because it's easier. It's easier to blame your partner. It's easier for them to be the enemy. It's easier to say, but I've tried and I'm all burnt out. Okay, that's great. But then don't expect squat different. Don't expect it. And so that's like the heat behind that post. And every time that post gets like, what are you talking about? Like, well, we're like, yeah, unless you're in an abusive relationship, like you are part of the equation on why it's stuck. And that's always the last place we want to look.
Yeah. And the power is always within you. You can't make anybody else do anything or feel anything. And that is a terribly inconvenient truth, especially when you think you're right. But I'm right. And they don't see it. And it's like, cool, they don't see it though. And I feel like a lot of in relationships, we have baggage. Like we're like, well, I am done, but we have kids and we have a house and we have a business and we have this. And it's like, so many people just end up, they just get stuck in that repetition pattern because they're just like unwilling to do the thing that they know they should do, which is like, you said to what, like you may have outgrown the relationship. And I think that's where people get stuck. Well, if I've outgrown the relationship, I'm not willing to change the way I'm communicating, but I'm not willing to walk away. Then they're just in this like purgatory of stuckness. And it sucks.
It's a hard place to be.
It's so hard. You know, it's funny though. We're really okay with being at like a certain level of discomfort. In discomfort that's familiar versus discomfort that is new. Like what's that phrase? What's worse, the devil you know or the devil you don't? You see that all the time. Like I can handle a 9 of discomfort in like a dysfunctional relationship with me and you. But if I take you out of the equation, my toleration is a 3. Like that's going to contribute to that stuckness. That's going to contribute to the false narrative in your head about what you can handle and what you can do. It's just because you're not comfortable with that discomfort yet. You're not comfortable with that hurt or that pain or that flavor, but it doesn't mean it's bad. But that's often what keeps growth from happening.
For sure. Yeah. I saw a post about neuroplasticity and how people, did you see that one? Or maybe you posted it and I reposted it.
What's her name? We did it. We posted it. Yeah. And how it gets you not addicted, but like there is a reason you keep going back and it's like a biological thing happening in the brain.
Yeah. It's like familiarity. If you grew up in that kind of dysfunction and abusive, like an abuse, then you seek that out because there's something comforting about it to you and like something more calm is not familiar. So that actually feels worse. And that really resonated. It's terribly sad. It's accurate and it's sad, but it's good to know the neuroplasticity of things so that you can begin to change. I went to, have you heard of Abraham Hicks? It's this weird, like,
we don't know the same people.
I'm sorry. anyway, it was just this the conference here in Austin last weekend, and the people like go up to the stage and tell their stories. And Abraham is like, stop telling yourself the same story. You just keep repeating every time you say, I'm in 12 step or I am sober or I am this. You just keep like telling yourself the same story and perpetuating the pattern. And if that's not the pattern you want to be in, then you can't get out of it. So you have to retrain your brain. It's neuroplasticity and it's uncomfortable. But there it is. Okay. So this was one of the first questions I thought of originally. I think we were supposed to interview like a few months ago, but then life happened and babies happened and all sorts of things happened. But I was thinking, you know, OBGYNs get into, you know, they know everything about having babies and then they have a baby themselves and they think I should know better. And I've talked to psychotherapists before who had postpartum depression and didn't want to admit it because they're like, I should know better. Was there any part of you, either of you, like jumping into marriage that was like, I got this, like, I know what I'm doing. And maybe if things were kind of going maybe a little south or different, where you had any kind of shame around, like, I should know better?
Yeah, a lot of shame. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, pick a corner.
I'm like, yes, next question.
What pile do you want to dig into?
Yeah.
I think that I watched my mom be really disrespected growing up, and she was in an abusive relationship. And so when I was like, I will not repeat those patterns, I will not tolerate any of that in my marriage. And what's funny is, I don't want to use his name because I'll give him too much light because he's just nuts. My previous boyfriend that still likes to contact me, I knew that if I like married him, for example, I was like, oh, we will for sure get a divorce, like blah, blah, blah. So when I met my current partner, I was like, I'm going to do it right. And these are all this criteria that's so opposite that person and how I grew up. And yet when disrespect really started to seep into our interactions and I was treated in a very unhealthy way, I had so much shame around it. And I actually, we were just talking about this on the podcast. I had my therapist at the time, like reflect back to me that like, it was abusive behavior. And I was just like, I think I remember coming to you and being like, she said it was verbally abusive. And you're like,
Yeah, you both have that experience.
It's like, because you think you are going to not only be able to see it coming, but like you're going to do something different because of your knowledge. And I think that's what we really try to inject into like our content and how we show up is like, we understand both sides, what you should do, what you should know, and then what you actually do and what it actually looks like. If you had told me, I would have been able to work through these issues with my partner and have like a loving and fulfilling marriage after all this coming to the light, I would have told you, you were insane. I would have never stayed like with someone like that. But that's not my experience. And I had so much shame recognizing it was happening. I had to pay someone copious amounts of money to be like, this sounds like this. I'll never forget like the way the light looked where I was sitting. And I was like, what the fuck? Like
me?
No way. But I think that just speaks to though, like to your point, these blockers, these expectations, and that the humanness factor that will always come into play, that which is why we should give ourselves a lot of grace and give each other grace. It's so easy to judge based on an Instagram post or a reel or a Facebook picture. But until you're in it and making decisions in that moment, shame is definitely one of those factors that like keep you not even stuck, like paralyzed, paralyzed.
Mm-hmm. You know, we also both met our partners who we married really young.
Too young.
Wait longer. Yeah. And I think that is also something that no amount of education or schooling can prepare you for. Who you are if you've, well, it doesn't matter actually what age. Whatever age you are when you meet your partner is not going to be the same.
Yes.
You are not the same person. They are not the same person as, you know, after kids or even just 10 years later or job changes or whatever it is. I don't think I understood even as a therapist, what continually choosing each other in different stages of life, of your lives together means. And that there will be times that again, you outgrow the other person.
You haven't had a lot of life happen yet.
Yeah.
You haven't.
Attractive to me at 23 is very different than what is attractive to me now at 35. Right? Yeah. It's just we are different people, and that has to be an active choice, active work, every year, every month, whatever it is. And I definitely did not understand that, even being a therapist and helping couples. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I just was talking to my friend about her partner, and I was like, I just don't see that he's choosing you. Where this is one of those, like, the only person I voice text back and forth with, and we're super close, and I'm like, I just like this choosing each other and actively choosing anything, it's so important. How do you, like, what tools have you used? Because it's fair to say that at some point you're gonna go, we've really outgrown each other. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually don't want to choose you anymore. But like, what tools do you have, or what advice do you give to people going through the changes? Like you said, a job change, babies, having a child, which we can talk about, finances, moving, like all of those things, those big moments, how do you prepare couples? What questions should they be asking each other and conversations should they be having in order to continue choosing each other?
I don't know that it's so much like a question or like, yes, there should be conversations and we have an entire course based on that before the next step, shameless plug. There's like an entire, we literally go over 10 like important conversations in all these areas that you need to be having. But to answer your question, I think it is creating the space for those conversations to continue to happen. That is part of that equation that we don't talk about enough. If you are not prioritizing your relationship through a job loss, through a move, through kids, through family trauma, through your own trauma, you like the tools won't necessarily cut it. And that's where I think, you know, we talk all the time and roll our eyes about like the date nights. It doesn't matter what it is. If you are not multiple times a week connecting with your partner without a phone or Netflix in front of you, and all kinds of circumstances can make that very challenging. So we're not saying you need to be taken to Aruba three times a week. You're going to watch your relationship deteriorate. You are not going to grow with each other, because what you're not doing is looking at who your person is right then and there and getting curious with who they are right now. Not who you married, not who they were when your kids were born, not who they were 10 years ago. You are taking the time to being like, wow, let me look at my person in this like season of their depression. Let me look at them in this season of them working 60 hours a week, like, and then choosing to get curious and have empathy and love for that person. You can't do that while you're passing off kids and paying bills and dealing with family stuff and mental illness. Like, there needs to be consistent time together to experience each other for who you are right now. And that's also where play happens. So that's the other answer. You got to play with each other. We let kids do it 80% of the time in early schooling. And then we get to adulthood and we're like,
you're serious.
You don't need it anymore. Just go work and make money. But your relationship needs that novelty, that newness, that curiosity, that exploration. You need to have fun together. You don't need to just like have a beautiful house and like white picket fence, like all that. I don't know about you. Making that stuff is not necessarily fun. Like, that's pretty fucking stressful. You need to have space to play. And so that's how you pick somebody every day. But you've got to connect to the person that's in front of you, not the person that you moved in with or the person you said I do with. That those are two different people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I also add that in the normal ebb and flow that happens in relationships, in the ebbs, right? That's the low times. The flow is the good.
Sure.
Whatever.
I'm not a scientist.
When you're in the bad times, how you treat one another is going to be really indicative of how you're able to choose each other, because you might not be in love with your partner all the time.
Not like them.
Yeah. But there has to be a foundation of respect there. Yes. And if in the times when you're not connected, in those times where you feel like you've outgrown each other, if you are belittling, putting them down, you know, like doing the things that are then going to make it harder to choose each other again and connect, because it feels like the theme of this episode is love is not enough. You cannot love your person, but as long as you genuinely respect them and want to have them in your life, it's going to be easier to choose each other again and come back together and do the work. But if you have just blown it, you know, and put your person down and stepped out on them or, you know, whatever it is, when things get hard, then you lose that respect, then it's going to be really hard to foster that love back up.
Because that is choosing them in hard times. Respecting them is a way. When I may not like you, but I still respect what we have committed to for today, even if it's hard.
Yep.
You are so smart.
Thank you so much.
Wow. Now you might need to write that down. You should be a therapist.
I will transcribe all of this and I will make sure that you have that quote, because
merch.
Absolutely true. Well, and that's such a great point, because I think there are certain things that once they are gone, there is no coming back. And I think loss of respect is one of those things. When you cannot look at your partner and like you don't respect them, like you respect them as a person because they're a human being, but beyond that you don't have respect for their actions, or you don't have respect for their parenting, like they, you know, as soon as that respect is gone, I think that's over, definitely over. And one of the things I was looking at a TED talk about how true love, you know, like the concept of love in our, it's like happily ever after. It's, I think it ruins people and it ruins relationships. And there's like a, and maybe you can speak to this. There's like a, an actual amount of time biochemically where you're actually in love. And it's about 13 months. That's what the TED talk was about. It's like 13 months. Great. And then you start to, you know, like you lose, it's the honeymoon phase is over. And that's where the work really begins. So in your, you know, in what you've seen in your opinion, what do you, how do you feel about like true love and being in love? And you kind of spoke to it earlier, like, are we always in love with our partners? Or like, what is it, what's it supposed to, what are our expectations? How do we need to adjust our expectations?
I think you're truly in love with me.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. That's true.
So we do not believe in the one or the happily ever after or
no
the
soulmates.
No soulmates. Like we don't really.
Sorry, everybody listening.
We don't really believe in that. I think love is maintaining respect, continuing to choose your person. Love is going to look different at different stages of life. Love is not something you found somebody that you want to spend your life with, and therefore love is like a blanket that is just over you all of the time. Sometimes love is going to look like, yeah, fighting but maintaining respect. Love is going to look like co-parenting. Yeah. Love is going to look like
parallel lives,
traveling together and having romance and fantastic sex. And it, you know, like it can
we're
look like
we're traveling together and no sex.
Yeah, we're traveling together and no sex. But we all know vacation sex is so much better.
So good.
right? Like love shifts and changes. I don't think love stays constant. I think that definition is ever growing and ever changing. And I think Disney and rom-coms have really fucked us. Oh, sorry. Can I say bad words on this
podcast? Absolutely.
Okay. Has really fucked us up in that way. I don't think there's one set definition of love, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that. I think you just freed everybody because I think that's a big part of the problem is that everybody is thinking that love needs to be one thing. And when it's not, then we're like, well, I'm not in love with you anymore. Well, that's not actually the way that it's supposed to be. It's about respect. It's about choosing each other. It's about being friends. It's about co-parenting. It's about traveling together. It's about so many other things. And yeah, I do think that rom-coms have ruined things for everyone.
But they're so good.
They are
so good. I watched Serendipity on the plane.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh my! But I was like, this is such bullshit. Yeah. Like it's such bullshit. Yeah. And I was like, got me. Yeah. You got me.
Yeah,
totally.
Got me.
I'm gonna throw an '80s one out there, Baby Boom, actually, with Diane Keaton.
I've never seen that.
Oh, it's my. I love it.
I like Diane Keaton. Yeah.
But it's like businesswoman. Like women's empowerment, and also it's a rom-com. It's great.
Okay,
I love it. You have to watch it. So we've got about 7 minutes left. So I want to talk about one of the biggest things that I am open that becoming a mother shifted my relationship really drastically, and I hate the baby registry industry because it's like nothing on that baby registry is anything that you actually need to be able to navigate the identity change that comes. Cause nobody talks about like, wait, who am I now? Like that's not talked about. Yeah. Don't even get me started on the physical stuff that women do not get access to that we should, like pelvic health, physical therapy, all of that stuff, but also the relationship. And I found like my relationship suffered immensely when I became a mom, because we didn't have the conversation of, okay, how's this going to go? How do I need support from you? What's the division of labor? Just like the logistics of things. How are we going to stay connected when we're so tired that we can't even see straight? The comparisons that go on, especially if you're the mom who's up with the child breastfeeding all night long or bottle feeding, and you look over, everybody's done that. They've looked over at their husband sleeping and they're like, just like imagine.
Useless nipples.
Exactly. Yeah. Like hurting them. So How do you recommend that couples get ready, like conversations before having a baby, and then maybe that first year postpartum, if they're like, oh crap, we didn't have this conversation, what do we do? Like adjusting those expectations. What should women do and men together?
We have a really great episode on this on our podcast, For Better or For Worse, Until Kids. Mm-hmm. And our resounding answer to your question was, kids are not the problem. It's not kids that change anything. It's just a different light that's been shown onto your relationship. Kids are just maybe the motivating factor that bring up all that shit to the surface. The communication issues, the attachment issues, the things you are already not talking about or that are unequal, mental load, physical load, those are things that are already there in your relationship. They're just, the stakes aren't as high because it's just you two or you three or you four that depend on that. Then you introduce this other little person, however they come, and they don't have that autonomy. They don't have that independence. It becomes very clear on who meets those needs. That's not coming from thin air. Those are all things that everyone involved in that relationship has excused, allowed, not thought was a big deal. I think kids are just what blows the top off of that. And so to answer your question, you go to couples therapy early. You do before the next step early, like that course we were talking about, because we avoid that thinking that I do is going to change that, that finding the white picket fence and having a house together is going to get you to that next step and prepare you, that finding true love will get you through parenthood. And it's not. It's doing the work preemptively. Because again, kids are an exacerbating factor. I have two of them. They're definitely, you know, bring up all my favorite parts of myself, good and bad. And none of it is new. None of it is new when it comes into the relational dynamic. It is things that I excused before that I did not have. Maybe it wasn't as severe or the stakes weren't as high, but you have this little person being dramatically impacted by what's not going well between you and a partner. Yeah, like I think they're the motivation that gets you to change, but what do you do about it? You do the stuff, you do the work before they get here. I think too much is on the, like, the focus is on the registry and the room and the breast pumps.
Yeah, because roles get defaulted and you don't realize that until what you're saying, those little things are completely dependent on you. So I know, like, I never talked about invisible labor with my husband before we had kids. Or
isn't that mind-blowing?
Yeah, like, I think to your point, like, these are the conversations. Like, yeah, how do you guys define invisible labor in your home? How do you define the mental load and what's expected to me if I have the kid? Who's taking, if you both work, who's taking time off of work when our kids are sick? Is it automatically me because I have a vulva and that's what society's told us to do? Because that's going to make me real fucking resentful. Who makes more money? Does that mean the other person is defaulted into childcare because they can't take time off when there's money? Speaking of money, how do you relate power to money? Yes. How is that going to show up?
How do you value kids? Unpaid labor versus labor you get a check for? And why is it different?
Yeah. Like, those are the conversations that we don't have, we're not taught to have, but are the main causes of resentment after little ones show up. Because in heterosexual relationships, majority of the time, women lose. Because that's what we're conditioned in our society to think and to take. And
we're fed up,
we're tired, but I think a lot of women are tired, and I think that's why we're seeing a lot of separations and divorces, especially of younger mothers. In some ways we're realizing, oh yeah, things changed real quick, my partner is not doing anything about it because they're benefiting off of it, and this is not the life I signed up for. It's 2023.
Yeah, wow. That was profound.
Yeah, like you just unleashed all that.
No, I love it. And it's just like you said, it's our stuff that comes up. It's not theirs. And it's just like in parenting, when you can't handle your toddler's tantrum, it's not about them. It's about your ability to handle discomfort.
Yes. And
it's they're just a mirror for you. And as you were talking about the roles before and like the problems before, and I'm thinking, like, of my own marriage, I'm like, oh yep, Yep. And there's so much power in that, though. There's so much power to take ownership of that. And yeah, but you're right too. Like, women do end up with the shitty end of the stick. And you mentioned unpaid labor. And, you know, I know there's a big conversation with stay at home moms where they're like, well, I don't make the money, so I don't spend it. And it's like, yeah, but your partner goes out and makes money while you stay home and do something that you would have to pay somebody else to do if you were also working. So
they couldn't afford you. They most likely could not afford you. You are the highest unpaid person in your household. That labor is usually something families wouldn't even be able to compensate monetarily for what one partner will do with one child.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard a statistic that I'm going to butcher, but I will look for the actual stat about how women and men, when they get life insurance policies, the men tend to get a higher policy than women, but it actually should be the inverse.
It should be reversed.
Yeah, because it's a woman goes first, the amount that she does. And I know this even with my friends who have high-powered careers and make lots of money, and women who are stay-at-home moms, it's still the mom who seems to be ordering the diapers, ordering the wipes, getting the clothes, making this calendar for the birthday parties, getting the gifts, all of the stuff. It's mind blowing.
NPR had
that Atlantic.
Study. Oh, Atlantic
yeah, had that article that once women in a heterosexual marriage surpass their male partners in earning power, they end up doing more mental load, physical load in the relationship. So they actually lose. They end up making more money, thinking the power differential will switch, but they end up taking more to have to compensate what society, as well as the shit and patriarchal norms that have been brought into their marriages, are telling them that they're now should feel guilty for and bad. So it hurt. Women are then punished for actually doing better in a male dominated like field when they're paid more. We end up taking on more because it's looked at as a negative. That's a phenomenal article. It also makes you just want to pull all your hair out.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'll find that for the show notes. Okay. I could talk to you forever. And I know we barely scratched the surface, but you mentioned two courses that you have and you have a podcast. So can you tell us about those two courses and the podcast so that everybody can stop what they're doing and go find you?
Yes, our OG original Decoding Couples Baby is the Relationship Roadmap course, which is our bestseller. We've helped thousands of couples globally. It teaches everything about attachment styles. So understanding how your attachment and your partner or partner's attachments work for and against each other to really understand why things get triggered, why you stay stuck, why certain fights happen. Then we teach you the communication skills to use once you have this base understanding. Throw out your old tools, learn the new. And then last part is sex and intimacy. So a lot of times people want to work through sex and intimacy first. Let's just make that nice and pretty. Not understanding that understanding attachment and better communication skills are what is going to lead to your best sex life. So we bundle those three things together, give you a nice roadmap to have a healthy relationship. And then our second course is Before the Next Step, which is for couples who are looking at either getting married, wanting to have kids, moving in together, joining finances, anything that feels like a big step in your relationship. This course walks you through 10 topics, 10 core conversations to have with your partner before you take this next step. We literally give you a score in each section. So you're going to understand where you need work, where you are good and connected, and where somewhere in the middle. And then we give you the questions to ask each other, the conversations to have, and the tools to learn so you can regulate, repair when those conversations get tough. So those are our two courses. And then we also joined the podcast world a couple months ago, the Decoding Couples podcast, where we cover
anything.
Any and all things in relationships. And you can find that wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we're having a sale really soon on our relationship roadmap. We're having a spring sale. So depending on when this episode goes out, we can give you the code. But May 1st, we're having a big sale. So if, you know, it's been a challenge before, you would definitely want to snag it at this price because I think we only do it twice a year.
Yep. 45% off the relationship roadmap starting in May. So we can give the code for your listeners also.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for all that you're doing, and you're helping so many people. And even for those who decide not to be together, you're just helping. I feel like you're just helping people just live more in their truth, and helping the children of these parents who are just imperfect humans trying to make it happen with less trauma for their children as they actually deal with their stuff as they uncouple or stay together, however that's going to go. So I really appreciate both of you so much. And I am a forever fan and supporter. So I will be cheering you on.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, ladies. Okay, if you do nothing else, just please spread the love. Share this episode with your friends who are getting into relationships, in relationships, maybe getting out of relationships, because I really do think the health of their relationship depends on it. This was one of my favorite, most impactful shows. And do yourself a favor, follow Decoding Couples on Instagram if you're not already doing so. They have the best posts. Listen to their podcast, buy their course. You simply cannot go wrong. I know that they were talking about the code, and that was recorded in April, and now it's almost July. So if I can get you the code, I will, even though it's a few months late. Just DM me if you're interested. I'm at The Mom Feed Podcast on Instagram. And I'm also, if you want to email me, lauren@themomfeed.com. I'll see what I can do. Thank you so much, Rachel and Stacy for being on the show. I do apologize. It took me a few months to actually get this out, but alas, it's here and it's amazing. And I believe that it's divinely timed. If you really enjoyed this episode, please give it a 5-star rating and leave a glowing review. And if you're not already following this show on Instagram, you can do so at The Mom Feed Podcast. All right, y'all, that is a wrap for today. Tune in next time. When will next time be? I don't know. I'm hoping a week or two from now, but who knows what life has to serve up for me. But next time I'm going to be having a conversation with Helen from Frownies. You have seen Helen all over the internet and social media showing you how Frownies work. And if you don't know, you're like, what are you talking about? What are Frownies? Well, you're going to learn all about them and good skincare in my episode with her next time, all about preserving the quality of your beautiful skin. It's not anti-aging. It's kind of, that's silly. Our skin is going to age. It's about how you can preserve the quality of your skin as you age so you can do so gracefully. And Frownies are just one of those tools to help you do that. And then they have all sorts of amazing products for your face as well, which, by the way, you don't need a lot of. We're going to get into all of that. So anyway, that's happening. Let me just give myself 2 weeks to get that episode out. Okay. Okay. Go continue being awesome because you are awesome and you know it. And if you're like, no, I'm not, and you needed to be reminded of that, I will be here to do that anytime. Let me be the person who reflects back to you how awesome you are, because mama, you are killing it. Okay. I'll see you next time.